This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
You're listening to Australia's number one tech podcast. Every week, join hosts Brad and Jason here on the Tech Webcast. Download our iPhone app, follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and visit us online at techwebcast.info. Here are your hosts, Brad and Jason.
Welcome to episode 156 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on Saturday, the 1st of October, 2011. Tech Webcast is recorded live every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday nights at 7. Today's hosts are Brad, Jason and Aaron. Our special guest is Dan McDermott, a Google Plus podcaster. Good afternoon, Brad.
Hey, Jason. How are you, mate?
Pretty good. It's a bit rainy around here.
It's raining here in Melbourne. Also, we had some bad storms the other day, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm up on the mid-north coast, and they've got a fate here somewhere with a Ferris wheel and a light aircraft crashed into the top of the Ferris wheel.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
It's stuck in the Ferris wheel. It had two people on the plane, and there were only two kids on the Ferris wheel who didn't get hit by the plane, but the plane is now stuck in the Ferris wheel, and emergency services are there because there's aviation fuel leaking and all sorts of stuff. And apparently, it's at a nearby airstrip, which is almost right at the show, and the plane was trying to take off, and it didn't get up high enough to clear the Ferris wheel and smashed into the top of it and got stuck. So, fortunately, nobody was hurt by the look of it, but, pretty bizarre stuff for a country town to happen.
Unbelievable. What are you doing? You're in Tyree, is that correct?
Yeah.
In Tyree, yeah, that's good. You're in there for...
Yeah, just near here is where it happened.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, that's
just getting away for the holiday long weekend.
Good on you. Long weekend, Monday off.
Yep.
Oh, good. Good on you.
So I'm staying here till Monday. Good on you.
Good on you. You need a break. Yeah.
Hey, Aaron.
And we've got Aaron. Hey, Aaron. How are you, mate?
Hey, really, really good. I'm just chilling out on the lovely Gold Coast with beautiful weather, not putting up with rain like you suckers.
Yeah, shut up. You suck.
Oh, well. Someone needs rain down here. And also, we've got Dan McDermott. Hey, Dan.
Hey, great to be here. How you guys doing?
I'm going pretty well,
mate.
Welcome to the show. Yeah, as always.
Thanks.
Yes, Tech Webcast, and this is episode 156. Leave some comments on iTunes. Could please, that would be great if you could.
Yeah, listeners.
Yeah, and I just want to mention that as well. And also, as we mentioned as well, every Sunday at Bright FM or Valley FM, Tech Webcast gets replayed on an FM station now, which is run by Bo Sinclair.
Sweet.
And
he runs the station or the show broadcast?
He does all of it, mate.
Oh, okay.
And
sweet.
You can listen to that on the iPhone. There's an app for that called Tuning Radio. You can just do a search for Valley FM.
And, where's that held out of Melbourne?
That's in Victoria and Bright.
Right, cool.
In Bright, yeah. So, I forgot to mention that last week, so make sure you tune into that. That's really cool. That's good of him to do that.
And we're still number two on the tech podcasts.
Number two. I bought Scott in a bit, but, you know.
Go Tech Webcast. Woo!
Yeah, just keep downloading every day and just, listen to it. We do want to get number one.
All right, let's keep hear clicking. From Dan.
Every day, yeah. All right, Dan, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks so much. I've watched you guys on YouTube and I've listened to your podcast. And I actually, before we interacted, I remembered checking it out once. And I was impressed. It was really interesting, especially because it's in Australia, where I've never been. My sister's been to Australia.
Cool.
But I haven't. But technology is a universal language that folks understand. And we're all sort of sharing the same services now. So it's a great time, really. If you're interested in this kind of thing, this is the best time to be involved in it. It's really exciting.
For sure. Now, we've got some tech news from Jason. I'm going to quickly just play that real quick to get that out of the way. And we'll come back. Now, if you want to go get a drink or something, this probably would be a good time, 4 minutes. And back after this. And we've got some questions for Dan. Getting them two names mixed up.
And now for the Tech Webcast news. Apple fears the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 will launch onto the market with the velocity of a fire hose and take away iPad 2 sales so quickly that customers may be permanently seduced away from Apple's iOS platform, its lawyers told the federal court in Sydney. Apple is suing Samsung for patent infringement, arguing the firm slavishly copied its iPad.
The interlocutory hearing, which is considering whether Samsung's competing tablet should be banned from the Australian market, revealed for the first time how serious a threat Apple regards Samsung to be. Samsung has agreed not to market nor sell the Galaxy Tab 10.1 in Australia until Justice Annabelle Bennett makes a decision, but some online sellers such as Kogan have already attempted parallel imports. Responding to questions from Justice Bennett about whether Samsung's model could be singled out, given there are other Android-based tablets on the market, Apple's lawyer said it saw the Galaxy Tab 10.1 as the main competitor to the iPad. "This is vastly the one that is going to be targeting the iPad 2," Apple's counsel said. "This is going to be launched onto the market with the velocity of a fire hose, and the Galaxy Tab 10.1 is going to just come in and take away tablet iPad 2 sales so quickly that by the time we get to final hearing, the full impact of the patent infringement will be felt to the detriment of Apple and to the benefit of Samsung." Samsung has requested sales data showing the effect Galaxy Tab 10.1 sales had on iPad 2 sales in other countries. Apple has refused, and Justice Bennett has sided with Apple. Microsoft has begun rolling out Windows Phone 7.5 Mango, the newest version of its smartphone software. Mango, first introduced in May, comes with a slew of new features designed to improve the user experience. "Our top goal was product satisfaction," Microsoft's Aaron Woodman told Mashable. The updated OS includes several updates to its suite of communications tools. Microsoft has improved the communication hub of the Windows Phone. It has supported Facebook and Windows Live integration before, but Mango adds support for LinkedIn and Twitter as well. You can check out your friends' social updates while browsing through your contacts. Microsoft has developed advanced algorithms for matching Twitter and LinkedIn handles to contacts in your phone. Microsoft is also introducing grouped features, including the ability to send instant messages to small groups and threaded conversations for Facebook and Windows Live messaging, in addition to SMS. And Amazon, the world's largest online retailer, has unveiled its Kindle Fire tablet computer, taking aim at Apple's best-selling iPad with a device that's smaller and less than half the price. The Kindle Fire will have a 7-inch display and sell for US$199, compared with $579 for Apple's cheapest iPad in Australia, Amazon executives said. The device, a souped-up version of the Kindle electronic book reader, will run on Google's Android software, the Seattle-based company said. Amazon also introduced a touchscreen version of its e-reader to be called Kindle Touch. "Today, Kindle Fire and Kindle Touch are available only in the US," a spokeswoman for the company said. Chief Executive Officer Jeff Bezos is betting he can harness Amazon's dominance in e-commerce to pose a real challenge to Apple's iPad after tablets from rivals such as Hewlett-Packard and Research in Motion have fallen short. Sales of Amazon's electronic books, movies, and music on the device may help make up for the narrower profit margins that are likely to result from the low price, said Brian Blair, an analyst at Wedge Partners in New York. "Amazon is really the only other guy, the other potential tablet player, that has similar offering to what Apple has," Blair said in an interview last week. "If you look across their product offerings, they have content that none of the other tablet makers currently have because they have content on the media side. Some analysts have speculated that Amazon would sell the tablet at a loss. Bezos said that isn't the case, but the company is happy with a slimmer profit margin than other manufacturers. We want the hardware device to be profitable and the content to be profitable. We really don't want one to subsidize the other," Bezos says. And that's the news for today.
That is the news indeed. Thanks, Jason, for recording that for us, mate.
That's all right. And the other interesting thing that I was just reading today, that it's possible that Amazon is going to take HP's Palm unit and integrate them in for future Kindle stuff.
Wow. Okay.
That's big.
That is big, yeah. What about you, Aaron? What are your thoughts on them news stories, mate?
Well, in terms of the Kindle Fire, yeah, there's definitely credibility to WebOS being acquired by Amazon, mainly for the fact that Microsoft is suing anyone that uses Android powering their devices, so which means that Microsoft would soon come after Amazon for using that operating system. And I'm to understand that Microsoft have existing agreements in place in terms of patent protection for Linux, because Linux is used behind the OS for Kindle, but that those agreements don't extend to Android. So it could come to a point where Amazon might want to pick up WebOS just to sort of sidestep that issue and also get some patents along the way so no one tries to sue them.
Okay. And even if they just got the talent, it'd still be brilliant for them.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It could be pretty interesting, especially for the fact that HTML apps are the future, HTML5 apps, and that's really the premise that WebOS is built on top of, to use those technologies to build apps with. So it could be interesting. I really don't know at this stage, but it's definitely a big rumor. I'd say it's 50-50 whether it's true or not, but there's definitely credibility to it.
Yeah, I'd say the fire is going to be huge in the US, though, since people use Amazon for buying anything from their groceries, nappies, computers, you know, just about everything you can get is from Amazon. People are locked in, especially with the Amazon Prime, and having a device like that giving you full access to all of the Amazon stuff. Basically, it's an Amazon platform more than an Android anything, and you can get all of your Amazon stuff through there, even if you want to purchase while you're on the road, and this is going to be really popular and huge in the US.
Yeah, I actually thought, Dan, your opinion on this would be really interesting, because definitely Amazon has a much huger influence in the US than in Australia. How do you see the Kindle Fire going down in the US?
Well, it's interesting because I actually they had a big story. The first thing I want to I'll answer that, but the first I got a question on what you said about WebOS and the potential for the Kindle. Are they patent suit proof? I mean, if they were to produce a product, if Amazon were to purchase WebOS or Palm from HP, is WebOS built on other technologies that could potentially open them up to patent suits, or is it sort of a patent suit proof platform?
Well, basically, WebOS is built on top of Linux, so there's always a threat of being sued by Microsoft, because Microsoft claimed to have 230-something patents that Linux infringes. But the thing with Palm, and the reason why no one's ever touched them, is that Palm has been around forever, right from the Palm Pilot days. And so they got a lot of the early patents for handheld devices as well as software techniques on a handheld device. And so anyone who wants to actually try to sue Palm are only going to get countersued by them for patents that they hold on a bunch of things. So it seems to be that Palm is the one business that everyone's left alone for fear of retribution. You know what I mean? So to answer your question, like, definitely they would be left alone, definitely.
A lot of the reason that Google is buying Motorola Mobility for their incredible patent portfolio, and since they lost out on that deal where they were trying to buy, was it Nortel? And they were bidding different stages of pie and different unique numbers. But The patent thing has exploded. It's a huge deal, and it seems like the consumers are just, I mean, they're suing each other. They're wasting all this money. The lawyers are the only people benefiting, really, because they all seem to settle, and then they get sued back the next week, and then somebody buys another company to get some more patents, and then they back off. It just seems like a waste of time, and they really should spend more time trying to beat the other company fair and square in terms of developing a better product, the way Amazon is going after the iPad and other tablets by creating an everyman's iPad, sort of like in America. I guess they have the same brands there, but you know, like take T-shirts, right? You've got Nike T-shirts and you've got Hanes. Well, Nike is more expensive. You know, Calvin Klein, Nike, whatever, and there'll always be a market for that, and that's the iPad. It appeals to folks with a little more disposable income, first adopters, and then you've got the Hanes crowd that is like your everyday man who's buying that, and there's a market for both. But the WebOS thing is really interesting, and I'm a former Palm person. I had a Palm Trio, and then I went to BlackBerry, and then I went basically to use Google Plus was the motivating factor, but then I ended up getting an Android phone. And when I switched from the BlackBerry to the Android, it was like switching from a calculator to my first computer. I was blown away by what you could do. It's really that dramatic. I mean, I know Barack Obama, our president, has a BlackBerry, and he probably has like, you know, six guys with cases to keep it secure. But my goodness, it's once you go to either an iPhone or an Android or any kind of smartphone. A real smartphone versus what the BlackBerry offers is just, it's no wonder that RIM's, you know, in the tank. But I'm changing the subject on you.
With patents, it's definitely interesting. you know, it's obviously it's not fair. It's holding everyone back. But nonetheless, Android has been a way for Amazon to just jump into that main discussion. And I was just saying to the boys before we started recording that I really feel now that Amazon have joined that top tier of discussion now. It used to be just Apple and Microsoft. Now it's Apple and Microsoft and Google. And now, honestly, I believe it's Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. They've joined that top tier now. And Amazon is just, Android, I should say, it's just been a way for them to just, as a stopgap measure, to jump into that top tier discussion. And, you know, I'm reading today that Google aren't very happy about it, that they've used Android in such a way to power these devices whilst ditching the entire UI. But nonetheless, they've joined that top tier. This Kindle Fire is definitely looking like it can go places. And yeah, just I'm coming back to the earlier question, really interested to hear what you think about what people are saying in the US, whether they're excited about the Kindle Fire, whether they really think that a lot of people will buy them, and what they think that they can do with them.
Yeah, it's huge. It's sort of like if McDonald's all of a sudden introduced the McCell phone. I mean, it would have an immediate widespread impact, right? Yeah, it would be dramatic. Yeah. It would be an overnight game changer. And that's the case here because Amazon is known for low prices, and you often, unless you're in a few specific states, you don't have to pay sales tax, which, you know, is 4 or 5%. But really, they're just, you know, it's a lot cheaper to run a business over the internet than to have footprints all across the country and pay managers and buy real estate and all this stuff. So they have an advantage, and they've just gotten so good. And remember when they started out, they lost money for years, like a decade. And they were just popular. They started out selling books and then, you know, going on and on. And it just grew and grew. But it was just unbelievable that the rumors started coming out that they were going to release some kind of tablet. And a lot of us folks have been saying, as I'm sure many of you have, is that the iPad is a great tablet and that all the others, they're fine too. Some have certain features that are better. Maybe they had a front camera or whatever first, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is nobody has a tablet that completely blows away the iPad, that makes it look like a, you know, a ghetto Nokia phone from 1998. So they're all trying to charge the same price. That's BlackBerry's problem. That was HP's problem. Everybody, they think that if you're going to introduce the Hanes shirt, that you can charge the same as the Nike shirt. Well, given the choice, if it's the same price, I would rather have the Nike logo on my shirt than the Hanes logo. And I would rather enjoy that quality that you get with the Nike logo versus the Hanes logo. And you can't so that was the big thing. I was like just racking my brain. I was like, what is wrong with these people? They think that they can take their knockoffs and charge the same price as the original. But then the bigger problem is that all these tablets are expensive and they can't really subsidize them because most people just want the Wi-Fi version because they don't want to lock into a 2-year agreement with some telco and have it subsidized and be $50, $100. So Amazon is like the perfect storm. None of the telephone companies can really come up with a game-changing, acceptable to the public plan where folks can get a tablet device of any kind and get some 2-year plan, and then it's $50 or $99, but you sign up for 2 years for X amount per month because people aren't buying it. They largely view it as a luxury or toy, and they're not really willing to commit to $30 a month to have a tablet device in exchange for getting it a little cheaper up front. So we've kind of been suckered in the same way with phones, in the same way that when you buy an inkjet printer, really – you're buying a commitment to buy ink for that inkjet printer. And if you do the math, I know I'm sitting 10 feet away from a printing press, printing ink because I'm in the newspaper business, but real ink is like $30 a gallon. When they print newspapers or offset press, actual really good quality professional ink that you would read from a magazine, newspaper, $30, $40 a gallon. Inkjet ink is $10,000 a gallon. And it's shocking, but that's kind of the same thing. It's like you think, oh, I'm getting a free phone, but you're locking in for 2 years. And so that didn't sell with the tablets because people, you got to have a phone, but you don't have to have a tablet. And as far as Amazon, they are a household name and they've been in battles down in California most recently over sales tax. And they weren't charging it. And so they introduced a bill that said that that they had to collect it. And the argument was it's bad for the consumer because you're raising taxes. And the other argument was it's not fair for the brick and mortar place, the Joe's bookstore on the corner, that they have to charge sales tax when you can just order from Amazon. And so it's like it became the thing with Amazon. You go into a Barnes & Noble or a Borders bookstore or any kind of bookstore, whatever the big chains are in Australia, and it's sort of like when you walk in those bookstores, they're really just a showroom for Amazon. You kind of browse and you buy a cup of coffee and you say yeah. hello, maybe use the Wi-Fi. Then you look and you're like, oh, look at this neat book. I'll have to buy it when I get home from Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, so that's
yeah.
kind of – it's the same thing here. I mean, they really know how to do it. They really know – they yeah. got their game down and they're terrific. And if they're going to do this, I think it's great because the end result is competition's always good. We've seen that with Google Plus and Facebook. They're both in a race to beat each other with new services and copying each other and the consumers benefit. And the same thing here to a degree in that – you know, Apple is going to look at very closely at what they're doing with Amazon, and they're going to each try to outdo the other. But really, you have to remember, unlike Google and Facebook, or maybe similar to a degree, but the iPad appeals to a higher demographic, in my opinion, than this Amazon tablet will. But I'll tell you what, I do not own an iPad, but I will buy a Kindle Fire.
I've owned an iPad 2. And I would never go. Would never go to another tablet or brand.
If I lived in the US, I think I would go with the really? Fire. And also, the other thing to add onto that is, who else gives you free unlimited lifetime 3G? Only Amazon.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's only $200. Yeah,
interesting.
It's only $200, yeah. and you get Amazon Prime for a year.
Yeah, I'm not really.
So
I'm
really,
not...
if you were thinking about buying that anyway, now your tablet's really only $130.
Yeah. I'm not really a fan of the screen size, to be honest. That's my
yeah,
opinion.
7 inches is a bit small, but yeah. definitely like, you know, in marketing, they always talk about the long tail effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for the Australian listeners of this podcast, the exciting part is that I think, yeah, a lot of these companies, Microsoft are renowned for doing this. They release things in the US first because they really need to get that pickup of the purchase of the product. And then if they can get that traction in their home country, you know, there's 300 million people in the US, then they can really get that per component price down, and that makes it feasible to launch internationally. So really, from what you're saying, Dan, this is probably the second tablet to hit the market that doesn't come with the ball and chain. That would lead to the mass adoption. And that mass adoption will lead to this device definitely heading overseas and being disruptive there as well. So we can definitely expect to see this Kindle Fire in our country, that's for sure. And we won't get it at launch, but it's definitely coming here.
But let me make a point on it's not big enough. Let me make a point on it's not big enough. You're saying the glass is half empty when really it's half full. It all depends on your perspective. A tablet is either like, man, there's two ways to look at it. You've got your laptop and you're like, man, I wish there was something less cumbersome. I don't have to open it. It's awkward to sit in the car with it on my lap. I can't type on it. So I got this tablet and it's the perfect solution, right? And then you want like a 10.5-inch tablet. But the other market is, man, I've got my Android or my iPhone and I just, you know, my eyes, I can't quite read this text and it's a hassle. I just wish my phone were a little bigger. That's yeah. the market for the Kindle Fire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
It's a little bigger than your phone and it's only $200 and that's what I paid for my phone. And there's no plan. It's a no-brainer.
And that 7-inch size is the kind of device that a woman could stick in their handbag
yeah, exactly.
and read on the train that's or on the bus or something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, good point, mate.
No, it's definitely going to be
Anyway, let's
we'll move on from this discussion.
Definitely.
Yeah,
because okay, let's talk about other talk with Dan about his podcast he does, the Google Plus podcast.
Oh yeah, it's a blast.
How did you get into that, mate? And what made you do it? Is it Google, because you're a big Google Plus fan or what?
Yeah, I just you know, you kind of look where the excitement is and I wanted to talk about it. And I started in radio in the 1980s and you know, I like it, it's fun, but I was on MySpace and then Facebook and then someone sent me an early invite to Google Plus. And I got there and I was just like, wow, this is so different. And it really is the next generation. It's very different from MySpace and Facebook. And it doesn't have everything that Facebook has, right? All my relatives aren't on there. It's different. But I found it was just a cool place. It was exciting, the circle thing and the, frankly, elevated level of discourse you would see on Google Plus versus some of the other social networks. And so I just was all excited about it. And I was looking to do I was doing my regular podcast called McDermott Report, and Christina Trappolino came on it. And she's, I guess, like a sort of a famous Google Plus celebrity, if you will.
Yep.
Someone who's known on there. And, you know, we did a show together, and I called her up later. I was like, you know, we should do a show just about Google Plus, because that's largely what she was interested in and what brought her to prominence. And so we did that. We started, and then she's off on some other projects, and so she's not on regularly now. She might pop in once in a while, so that's how it started. And now I think tonight was I didn't get to finish updating it, but I think it's episode 9 or 10. So we've been doing it for 2.5 months, but cool. Basically there wasn't anybody else doing a show about it, and it may evolve into a Google Week or a Tech Week down the road. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, that's good, mate. Now, what are your thoughts on Google Plus and the app and stuff, that sort of thing? Do you use it on your phone and that sort of thing? And have you tried the Hangout from your phone and that sort of stuff?
Yeah. In fact, it's really awesome. And I think I violated several Virginia state laws because I was driving over a couple bridges coming into town. And I was like, man, I want to do a Hangout. So I'm like sitting there. I'm driving. I'm glancing down. If any police are listening, I'm just kidding. I'm making this up as I go. But I was driving across the bridges, and I was like looking down, and the big frustration was I was trying to find a Hangout. Finally, I found one, so I clicked on it, and I mean, it was awesome. It was I was talking to – I forget where they were, and I was just, what's up? And, you know, it was just shocking. It was kind of like when Google Plus first started. You were just so amazed at the technology and the Hangouts and all this other stuff. But yeah, the apps are great because they just added the ability to join a Hangout.
Yep.
From your phone, right? Yep. And before it was just you could do this. Frankly, I don't want to be negative, but largely useless Huddle, which is now called Messenger.
Yep.
Because they restrict it to solely mobile. Well, that's just not practical. I mean, the reason Google Talk is so popular versus the reason it's even more popular once you discover it than BlackBerry Messenger is because it follows you. You can be on your phone, and then you walk in the house, and then you can continue the conversation on your desktop, and then you can go out by the pool with your iPad or iPhone or whatever, and you can continue the conversation there, you know, and the conversation follows you, whereas BlackBerry Messenger and traditional text messaging are device-dependent.
Sort of locks you into the one platform.
Yeah, but Google Talk follows you. And now I've just got Skype both ways on this phone. I mean, it's amazing that the technology just, I mean, I don't know how many times you can possibly be surprised.
Yeah,
it just keeps coming.
It does, mate. It does. Now, what phone do you have?
I have a Motorola Photon. And we were all, I was all going to do a show about it. And when we discussed it, because I was trying to choose. First, I was leaning toward Android just because I wanted the latest Google Plus app. And I was trying to choose between, you know, the Evo stuff and whatever. And it just sort of this was the first gen new phone with a dual core processor, and it had, so I got it, and I haven't looked back. I mean, there's some stuff you have to wait for with a first generation phone. It might be a while before the Skype works both ways, but that sort of thing. But it's a fast phone. I like it. It's the Motorola Photon, which is, I think in the U.S., it's only with Sprint. I'm not sure if they have equivalent in Australia or the U.K. But it's just a modern dual-core phone,
okay.
And I love it.
Cool, man. And what's the camera specs and stuff on it, camera-wise? And
oh, my gosh. You're going to try me now here. You're going to test my... I'm looking it up as I say this.
Just rough sort of guess.
Man, I have no idea. It's got two cameras.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
The specs are front and back, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking here.
I just want to compare it to the iPhone.
I think it's similar. It's the Motorola Photon 4G.
So you have 4G where you live, Dan?
It depends where you are. I don't where I live, but if I go in the city, like today I was in Northern Virginia. That's why I was a little late getting all my stuff together. For the show tonight.
Yep.
But, yeah, I'm curious now. You've got me, wondering about this. It's got a good camera, but it looks better on paper, I've heard.
Okay.
Than what you actually get. I've heard some criticism, and a few of the pictures I've taken, I was surprised that they weren't all that. But sometimes, I guess it depends on lighting. Yes. But anytime you have a small sensor, my first business is newspapers, and so we have like, you know, $5,000 cameras, still cameras, and I can tell you that the larger the sensor is, it really makes a difference. And then with video, same thing. I mean, you know, if you have a 1/3 versus 2/3 inch chip in your camera, it makes a huge difference, especially in low light. Low light is the thing that separates the high dollar and low dollar cameras. If it's a nice sunny day or dusk or whatever, you're going to get a great picture.
Yep.
But if you have a challenging environment, if you're trying to go into a nightclub or some kind of dimly lit place and take a picture, that's where you get your money's worth.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm just trying to look for your phone now on the Motorola website, but I can't actually find it.
I'm looking here. I see an 8-megapixel HD video camera.
Wow.
And a VGA front-facing camera. 720 HD video capture. What I like about it is it's got an HDMI cable or HDMI port. But what it does is some phones just play media files. Like you can send your pictures or videos to a television. This one actually duplicates the front screen, which is, I think, 720p, and duplicates it onto your TV. So like you could run a Netflix full screen video and just set it down. And it's playing on your high-def TV through HDMI, exactly what's on the phone. And then another thing I like is the little kickstand on the back.
Okay.
If you open the kickstand, it immediately switches to horizontal orientation. And then you can just set it on there. You could be in a coffee shop, sipping a cappuccino, and you just flip the kickstand up, start your Netflix app, and you're watching the latest episode of whatever. Or a great 1980s movie available in the extensive Netflix library, just to dig there. Yeah. And but yeah, it's a cool phone. I like it a lot.
Good stuff, mate. All right. And Jason, you got any questions for Dan? Jason, Aaron, any questions for Dan?
Sorry about that. My microphone had muted.
Oh, okay.
When did you start podcasting, and what equipment do you use to record, edit, and publish the shows?
Oh my goodness. Okay. We wanted to do some web content, and I thought, well, you know, I have an interest because I used to do audio, you know, radio, regular radio shows, for radio stations as an employee. And then I thought, well, you know, I could just use that same skill and I can just, do this. So I guess it was a couple years ago, I'm thinking. And as far as equipment, I use Wirecast as the software switcher. I looked at TriCaster and I looked at Wirecast. I think TriCaster is more stable, but you pay for it. And Wirecast is, you know, a $500 program or a $1,000 program if you go pro, but I don't use the pro version. I don't see enough that it offers me to buy it.
Yeah.
And then I have four computers. I have a quad core that's my main streaming computer. And then I have a laptop that I use to monitor our Justin TV or Ustream feeds. And then I have a couple extra computers. One I use just for a Google Hangout. And the other one I'll use for Blog Talk Radio or Skype. And then for my audio mixer, I've got a Persona Studio Live, which is a Firewire mixer. And it's got 16 channels, really 12. Because like the last four are dual,
yep.
Stereo, and they count them each as one, and it's got four outs, and that's the key. If you want to do a podcast, and you want to have different elements coming in from different platforms, if you want to have one or two Skype callers, and you want to have an interface bringing in audio callers like from Blog Talk Radio or any number of other audio networks, and you might want you know, some other thing going on, and the problem is you don't want to echo, because it's tricky to route the audio so that everybody hears everybody else but doesn't hear themselves back, because there's what we call in the business, as you guys know, it's called a latency, where there's like a delay, you know, like hello, that would drive you crazy. Trying to hear yourself back, you couldn't have a conversation. So really, there's lots of ways, like virtual audio cables and stuff like that. But if you just have one other source, the virtual audio cables will work. And that's something you can Google and you can buy for like $20 and download. And it is a good solution. It lets you create as many cables as you want. You can introduce anything into it and feed things from it. But it's not a solution if you have multiple sources. Like if you had three different Skype callers. And you can put all the Skype callers on a screen, like, what is it, up to six or eight different ones? The problem is, how do you mute them individually? How do you bring them in so that if Brad is coughing or someone starts typing, right, you can turn that volume down a little bit and bring it way up when you say, hey, Brad, what do you think about this? Well, you don't have that ability unless you can take each source as a separate channel on your audio mixer. And so that's what this board does for me. But it wasn't cheap. It was like $1,200.
Wow.
That's worth it.
Oh, yeah.
So all your shows are recorded and shown live? You don't have any that are archived?
They're all archived on YouTube. My YouTube channel is Daniel P. McDermott. Mm-hmm. I get Brad can stick it in the comments because it's a weird spelling thing. But,
do you do that yourself, or does that come from one of your pre-record shows?
Live? What I do, like the actual thing is, I'll start, and like your show, it's you want to gear it toward audio because a lot of people will listen rather than watch. And Twit's like that. Leo Laporte's shows, the majority of people have traditionally listened, not watched. The Twit Network shows. That may change now as they've spent $1 million on a fancy studio and marketed it better that way. So what I do is like I'll post something in Plus and on Facebook. I'll say, okay, we're gonna do the show tonight. Here are the topics. If you want to add additional topics, then put a comment below. And sometimes I'll do a Google Doc and let anybody and open. A few times I've just opened it up and said anybody can edit the document and add topics. And then I can look in there, and there might be 7, 8, 9 people at a time busily editing the document up for the show. And it's great because it's like amazing to watch, and it's what the viewers want to see because they're choosing the topics. And then we have to look at it and then do it. You know, it's like the Wikipediaization of show prep. So anyway, we release some kind of basic list that I come up with, and I say, these are the first topics. Whatever you want to add, and then I put it out there. And then they can interact and edit it. And then a little before the show, I will start streaming on Justin.tv. And then I will start a Hangout on Google Plus. And for those of you who don't know about Google Plus, a Hangout is basically like six different people Skyping together. So I'll start that, and I'll share it initially just with previous callers. So if you've been on the show before, you'll get first dibs to get in because it fills up. Like tonight, there were regular callers who couldn't get in. And then I just have the different computers that I bring these different elements in and mix it together. And once I'm ready, I Skype into the Blog Talk Radio network, and then it'll start. And then I'll smile at the camera. I'll say, okay, everyone, I'm getting ready to start. And they all behave and they be quiet. And then I hit record, and I smile, and I say, hi, folks, I'm Dan McDermott. Welcome. This is Google Plus Week. Glad you could join us, blah, blah, blah. And then I do the show, and there are folks who have been watching from, you know, for half an hour maybe on Justin TV. And then I'll do the show, and then we'll finish it. And then I'll stop the recording, but then we'll continue to hang out, and I'll continue to stream. And I may say, well, you know, I'm going to go, you know, get a Pepsi or go to the men's room or whatever. I'll be back. And then we hang out for a while, and it's social. And the folks who watch live get to witness that's not on the recording.
Cool.
It's a lot of fun.
Cool, yeah, it is. Good, great stuff. I've seen your show. I've been on your show a couple of times, and it's great fun to be on there, mate. And it's really fun.
It's casual. You want to be professional to a degree in that you want to keep it moving and have a good show.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you want to be relaxed and casual and welcoming. You know, it's a balance. Yeah, exactly.
That's how we like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we don't even edit this podcast, so yeah. Anyway, we'll move on. Dan, are you any relation to Peter McDermott?
Not that we know of. He just happens to be somebody who does podcasts and has the same last name, but there's quite a few of us.
What about Paul McDermott? That would be even cooler.
Well, my
he's
middle
a famous
name.
Australian actor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he does a lot of comedy and he's on television.
And what about, Jason, what about Jason Cartwright? Wasn't there some sort of famous person with that surname too? Cartwright?
Yeah, yeah.
Beck
I can't remember.
Rebecca Carbright.
Yeah, from, from the Cowboy Show, from Bonanza.
From Bonanza, yeah.
Yeah.
And Lorne Greene, yeah. Okay. Great show.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so mate, when's your next show live? We're gonna head this up now and finish up.
Yep. Mine is probably Monday night. Most nights I do it if I can line up the guest, and unless there's breaking news, because sometimes stuff happens and I have to roll out and direct traffic or whatever.
Yep.
If we have a big news story like the Salahis, the alleged White House gate crashers that went into the state dinner, and then we're on the thing, and then he said that his wife was kidnapped. It was on TMZ, and then she had fled off with the head of Journey, the band. Well, they live here, so wow. I had a whole day planned, a show planned, and a guest lined up, and then that broke, and then I was like, okay, you know, I can't do it, and I had to cover this story. You know, we had to, you know, just follow it because it's all local. So you never know in the news business. When everything's fine, then all of a sudden it's Hurricane Katrina and everything's off, you know?
Yeah.
You just got to adjust. But it's exciting. You won't die of boredom. You may get killed in the line of duty, but it won't be from boredom.
All right. So where can they find you on the internet, Dan? On Twitter and stuff and that sort of thing?
Twitter is Daniel P. McDermott with one T. Again, okay. It's a weird spelling, and if Brad, you want to stick it in there. But I would just say the easiest thing is to go to my Google+ page, and even if you're not a member, you can still look at it and look at my about where I have my links to Facebook and everything.
Yep.
And that is simply there's a short URL. It's gplus.to/McDermott. And McDermott is McDermott.
Good stuff.
Or if you just Google Google+ week show or something, you'll see it.
I'll put that link in the show notes. Just the one link. So that's probably one link to go to. And
that's fine. Yeah. One link to rule them all.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And Jason, where can they find you, mate, on the internet?
Yep. Twitter, WAULOK Warlock, and BlueBillBApps.com.
So you're looking forward to seeing the iPhone 5, Jason, on Wednesday, mate?
I'll be getting an iPhone 5 the second it hits Telstra.
Good stuff. Good on you. I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you do. And I'm not sure. I may get one. I'm not done yet. I'll set up what's going to be in it. But I've got an iPhone 4. They're good enough. So,
yeah.
You know,
and where do we find Aaron?
Aaron, where can they find you, mate?
OzTech News on Twitter. It's OzTechNews and OzTechNews.com. Also, just wanted to tell everyone quickly, don't expect iOS 5 to come out next week just because the iPhone 5 will be announced.
Really?
Google are actually announcing Ice Cream Sandwich, Android 4.0, on October the 12th Australian time. Oh, no. And so it's likely that Apple will probably release iOS 5 at the same time, just crash the party and be a bunch of assholes.
When are they going to bring this bloody thing out? I want it out now, god damn it.
Maybe 14th. But also, Adobe is making an announcement on October 4 at the same time as Apple. Good luck to Adobe.
Yeah, good luck.
Hey, can I ask a quick question on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I'm new to Android. When they come out with a new version, I don't know what I've got. I don't know if I have 2 point something or whatever. But like on my phone, am I stuck with this? Or
probably.
You should be able to get 2.3. I'd say yours would be powerful enough.
Ah, but the new stuff is going to be for the next generation of phones.
Yes.
Probably because you've got a 4G phone, you probably will get the update. But I wouldn't expect I wouldn't expect many handsets to get the ice cream sandwich update because it'll be built from the ground up for dual core processors. So yours has the dual core processor, you'll probably get it.
Yeah. All right. Cool. The HTC Desire won't get the 2.3, even let alone anything else.
All right. Big show next week. We have Apple announcements, that sort of thing, and iPhone 5 discussion. And
should be great.
Can't wait.
We'll see you then.
See you then. And you can follow me on Twitter at Brad Oz and Tech Webcast. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Jason. And thanks,
Thanks, everyone.
Aaron, thanks, mate. Thanks, guys.
All right, see you later.
Thanks.
Hi,
appreciate
Glenn from Aussie Tech Heads. Join Will, Eric, and myself as we bring you the latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. Weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechheads.com.au. Aussie Tech Heads, Australia's longest running tech news.
Thanks for
podcast.
Listening. Be sure to check out Tech Webcast on blip.tv and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes to make sure you always have the latest episode at your fingertips. Tech Webcast, Tech Talk for geeks.